Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast on all things marketing, advertising, and communications. I'm your host, Ted Lau, podcast host, award-winning agency owner, and full-time family guy. Today on the show, we have Christy Horseman, VP Marketing at Thinkific, a leading course creation platform that enables over 50,000 active creators who earn hundreds of millions of dollars while teaching tens of millions of students globally. With over 10 years of experience in the B2B and B2C SaaS space, she leads a talented and diverse team of marketers who are passionate about empowering online editors and delivering value to their customers. Christy specializes in full funnel digital strategy, sales and marketing team operations, and marketing analytics. She's also a course instructor at BrainStation, where she shares her knowledge and skills with aspiring digital marketers. Christy resides in Victoria, BC, is a mom, dog mom, and would you know it, a Dijon mustard connoisseur. We have to dig into that later.
Sounds good. That was a good intro. Wow. I think that was the best one I've had.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, we try to aspire to, you know, the great podcast gods and hosts out there. So thank you for that. But hey, welcome to the show, Christy. I'm really excited to have this conversation. Ballistic Arts, my agency, has actually, you know, used Thinkific in the past. And so I when I saw that, you know, I had the opportunity to interview you, I was really excited to hop on. So
yeah.
Before we dig into Dijon mustard, I think we should really just talk about, you know, you and kind of your origin story, how you got to where you got, you know, yeah. To lead this kind of big global enterprise of a platform. So
yeah, it's honestly, sometimes it's very, and this is something I think going back to something a mentor told me a long time ago, is when you see these people, and especially I think women that have these big titles of bigger companies, and you see that, you think, you know, oh, they've made it and they know exactly what they're doing. And I think, you know, years of experience means they do have some knowledge, but a lot of the time they still feel that like imposter syndrome that everyone else does. My like origin story and where I got started was, you know, went to school, thought I was actually going to, you know, go to law school at one point, was like pretty set on that, and then decided I didn't want to work the hours and hours that my parents did, and tried to find something that was a bit different. Jokes on me, as I still work hours and hours now.
Wouldn't you know it, eh?
I know, right? Didn't really, kind of backfired, but and then finished my BA and went to BCIT for marketing and got my first marketing gig at a university at a big financial company in Vancouver called Canaccord. And I always say that through my first few marketing roles, I really developed kind of two things. One is I figured out what I did not like. Like, absolutely, like, was like, listen, I don't like hauling signs to events. That's something I do not like. and I really honed in on the digital side of marketing that was so prevalent and really upcoming at the time. And being in the financial sector, they were a little slower. And so I remember writing the first social media policy for our advisors and working on websites with them and realizing that this was what I wanted to do. This is the avenue of marketing that I really liked. And through, again, a kind of a series of, you know, roles in and out of marketing, still in marketing in different kind of firms, traditional and non-traditional. I was actually at a luxury fishing lodge where I was the sales and marketing person briefly. It was an interesting one. And ended up at Hootsuite, and I always say that I really grew up at Hootsuite because of the opportunities that a fast growing company affords someone, if you're willing to kind of jump on them. and was able to do a lot of different things within our what we call demand generation team, marketing team at Hootsuite. I ran the webinar team at one point, ran our automation team, our email team, all the way until running the demand team for our enterprise side of the business, learned a ton there. Went on to a couple other startups in and around Canada, and that's kind of like where I've based since, Hootsuite, where I've been is in tech, and then landed at Thinkific almost 3 years ago. And and it's been such an amazing journey. I came in just before we went public in 2021, which was insane, after, riding this massive pandemic high, big boom for Thinkific. And honestly, I think that it has afforded me just a lot of learning, one of which being at a publicly traded company, very different than not. So, that's kind of my journey and where I am today.
Well, that's really very, very cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, not a lot of folks get to work for a company that goes to IPO and then now you're still kind of working, because a lot of people, once IPOs, there's a lot of change and whatnot, change. And here you are. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things that you touched upon that I think a lot of our listeners, especially the younger folks that are kind of getting into their careers, is two things that you talked about. It's like, one, knowing what you didn't want to do, and then two, willing to jump at any opportunity. I remember, starting my career, same thing. Mm-hmm. I worked my very first job. Well, I only had one career job before Ballistic was right. When we started Ballistic, I made no money. So I was a news camera operator.
Oh, okay, cool.
And you talk about lugging signs and not liking lugging signs. Yep. I had to lug a 40-pound tripod and a 40-pound camera and a 30-pound tripod, right? Oh, with a battery pack, like looks like those Batman utility belts.
Oh, yeah.
That had 20 minutes. It sucked. And I realized I do not want to do this for my career. Yeah. And then your point about jumping on opportunities where a lot of folks might go, well, that's not for me, or maybe I shouldn't do that, or I don't have the time. Can you touch a little bit bit more on both of those points around, hey, not knowing what you don't like, knowing what you don't want to do is really important as much as knowing what you want to do, and then the hard work and willingness to take opportunity.
I think it's I have these conversations with a lot of people on my team today when we're talking about career progression and growth and, what do they want from their career and do they, what are they doing now that they don't like? And I think that it's really important throughout your career, really. But early on in your career, you have this ability to say, look, I'm going to try as many things, even if it's I like marketing. Like, I like marketing, right? You can start with that sentence and say, look, I'm going to try as many things as I possibly can within marketing. And I'm going to weed out the things I don't like. And one of the great things about, some roles in a lot of marketing teams early on is that you will get opportunities to do something for 3 or 4 months, or, maybe it's a one-off, and you can experience that and decide whether or not you put that in your pile of like or don't like, right? And if you like, you start going, hey, you know what? I'd like to explore that a little more. And you have those conversations with your people leader or your, VP of marketing or whatever it is. And you say like, look, I really liked this. And I really want to do more of it. I think I could be really good at it. And I just don't know all of it yet. So is there an opportunity for me to do a bit more of that? Let me grab something else that maybe someone else is doing or something that's nobody's doing. And I think that also goes for problems. When there's problems or things in the organization that you see that nobody's solving, that you think, hey, I think I could probably solve that. If you go and say to your people leader, hey, you know what? Like, I've got some bandwidth and I think that problem I could probably solve if you give me a chance to solve it. And nobody's solving it. So, hey, like, great. Have a crack at it. And if it doesn't go well, you learn something. And if it does, you learned even more and maybe you found another path. So I just really encourage everyone to, feel like, yes, you might have a job with a job description, but especially in fast moving organizations, you have the ability to learn and learn quickly and take opportunities as they come. And so just take them to kind of find, you realistically, that's not going to be your job forever and ever and ever. you could literally go to your boss and say, look, I don't want to do that anymore. It's not part of, it's not something that I'm passionate about. And, you know, there's always the discussions of like, well, it's maybe part of your job description, but it's good to have those discussions and figure out. So your people manager knows, hey, if something comes up, this is actually what this person's interested in. They can direct it to you.
100%. I mean, we encourage, actually one of the core values at Ballistic Arts is radical candor.
Totally.
Right? And to talk about, yeah. Right. And to challenge mm-hmm. directly while caring personally. And it's very important. And so we encourage all of our team members to mm-hmm. go, hey, if you're not loving this, but you fit the core values, we'll find something else for you to fit. And we've had many folks on the team who have ebbed and flowed within the organization mm-hmm. because they actually came to us and go, you know what? I want this instead, or I fit this better, and I see this problem. It's not just like you said, I don't want to do my job anymore. That's a different conversation. That's a very different conversation. But it also allows us as leaders to go, wow, I have someone that I can actually count on.
Totally.
That actually cares about their career and the organization, sees an issue that maybe we as leaders don't see, or maybe we're too busy to deal with, and now I got someone that's got our back. Like, heck yeah, I'm gonna bring that person on and grow them. So I think that's really cool. Another thing that you touched upon is like, well, okay, you if you know you like marketing, you want to be in marketing, great. At least that's where you start. Now, I do know this for a lot of folks that go from being the technician to now becoming management or leadership. There is a shift, right? Like I remember starting doing video production, then I did graphic design and all that kind of stuff. But then eventually I don't do any of that stuff anymore, right? Like I have a team, they run it, but that change, can you talk about that? Cause I'm assuming you don't do a lot of the stuff that you did when you were at Canaccord, right? Like you have different challenges, but a lot of people don't want to, or don't know how to embrace the management side, the leadership side. So what tips do you have there for people for their careers?
I would acknowledge that it's such a mind shift, right? Like you said, and it's something that you have to, I think a lot of people feel, you know, in conversations I have where they're like, look, I'm ready for the next step. I'm ready to be a manager. I'm ready to take on more of, you know, the admin, the, you know, within the company type activities that a manager does, especially as you get into things like senior management levels. And I think that it really is one of the hardest shifts I've seen multiple times people have to make. Coming out of like an IC into a team lead, coming out of a team lead into a broader team lead, it's just, it is a mental mind pretzel that you really have to get around. Some of the best things I've seen, and to your point, like, you know, maybe I don't do some of the things that I used to do in Canaccord, but I think that I love leaders, and this is where like you have to, the mental shift is even worse, is you still want to be able to get your hands dirty at some point. And you want to be able to get back in. And like the other, you know, I think a month ago I was, you know, rewriting an email because I, you know, wanted to get in there and talk to the team and show them what I was thinking about. And that sounds a bit micromanaging, but it wasn't at the time. It was actually very hopefully helpful. But I think that one of the biggest things is learning, and you hear this constantly, but it is one of the most important things, is to learning how to delegate and really take a step back. And acknowledge that you have people on your team that can do a good job, and they can do the job, and they're going to execute well, and you need to give them that space to do it. Because being a micromanager is one of the worst things that you can do. I always tell people in my new hires that I say, look, I'm going to give you, after your, you know, kind of 90 day, I'm going to give you a lot of freedom. And I'm going to come in. I'm still here for you. We still have regular one-on-ones and check-ins. But, you know, I'm giving you, I have faith in you. I hired you and I have faith in your skill that you can execute on this job and this role. And I try to give people a lot of space while obviously being there to support. But the delegation piece, really tough if you're used to doing everything and shifting, especially from that IC to like a team lead. The second thing is, I think that people jump into leadership roles thinking that people management skills will just happen. And for some people, sure. Like some people are great, naturally great, really great people leaders. However, that is not the majority. And even if you are a naturally great people leader, there's still things that you can do to refine that skill and get better at that skill. And it's one of the biggest failings I've seen of people leadership, and honestly, in my own experience, that if you don't hone that people leadership skill and you don't understand how to direct, to give advice, to, you know, not obviously micromanage, but also to nurture and be there for your team in ways that a good people manager is, your team will fail. And it will be because of how you manage them. There could be other extenuating circumstances too, but that's one of the trickiest pieces. And so shifting your mind from the doer to the delegator to the person that's the that's managing, that's nurturing, that's listening, is going to be one of the toughest things. And I think that I would encourage anybody on the people leadership side to just continually find courses, ask your company for courses. There's some really great ones out there. There's a cohorted one that we did, and it's name is escaping me, but it's one of those things where you can continually build that skill. The other element of kind of shifting that I always think about is you have to take a broader look at your work and understand how all of your work relates to the broader organization. So maybe if you're becoming a more senior people leader or leader in the company, you need to take when you think about that T structure, right? I used to go really deep, but now I'm very stretched across like a wide area. You need to be able to kind of have that 30,000 foot view of everything that's going on. And that feels very scary, I think, to a lot of people. And even with me, you know, trying to understand, like, how do I put myself in that position where I'm only getting the information that I really need and I'm not going so deep? I can't. I don't have the time. I don't have the bandwidth. But I also need to make good decisions as a leader. And I think that skill is something that comes with time. It does. I don't think anybody kind of walks in knowing it. But it does start with the first two on the people leadership lens, which is being able to delegate properly and not micromanage, and being a really solid people leader. Because if you have good people who are doing the things, you will be able to do your things.
Yeah, I can't really add anything more to that. I mean, the only thing that I in my experience is a lot of it is trial and error. And yep. I mean, I made a ton of mistakes and certainly had many teams fail over the many years that I've been a leader. And I think that's okay, right? Like, we all need to figure out our path and our style. Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about courses, and given, you know, you work at Thinkific.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should talk a little bit about that. Like, you know, as part of the information that I have on you, that you really want to talk about the creator economy, mm-hmm. right? And what that's about. And given, you know, this whole AI, generative AI and all that kind of stuff, how does that impact the creator economy? And what do you see the trends are going to be in the next, I don't know, 6 to 12 months?
So I think we have embraced AI pretty heavily into our platform, into even some of the marketing teamwork. And I think the viewpoint that we have on it, and actually Greg, our CEO, was just quoted in the Globe and Mail last weekend on a really great article around like how AI is helping businesses and not necessarily hurting them. And it's really interesting because in the creator economy, you'd think that, well, you know, if everyone can build a course, you know, using AI, then everybody can be a creator, or what we like to call creator educators, to kind of differentiate those that are what we think of as creator entertainers, those out in like YouTube and things like that, and that don't necessarily have courses. And one can transfer to the other, but we think of Thinkific as, you know, the creator educator. And if everybody can become a creator educator using AI, what's going to happen to this business? And I think that the biggest thing for us is that when you look at the people who are really successful at doing this, like being a creator entertainer or educator or whatever, it's because of them. It's because of them as a person. It's what we call their unique genius. And that's something that AI can't do, right? That the personality that we have, the connections that we make with people, our personalized viewpoints on the world, you know, that's something that we're always going to have. And so I think if we really think about how do we emphasize this unique genius for the creator? And within their courses and how, you know, we use AI to make things simpler and faster and do the jobs. You know, we think about AI as like, you know, if you're a creator and you're starting out for the first time, AI is going to be like your first employee. Right? They're going to do the things for you that you don't want to do. And that's how you should see it. But what we want is you putting your unique genius, because you're not going to be able to build an audience or, you know, maintain engagement with that audience unless you kind of have that unique viewpoint, right? And you're uniquely you. And then I think the interesting thing with Thinkific has been, you know, we built this platform for creators. We made it so it was really easy to get up and get started. And, you know, we were really there with creators along this journey. But then we, you know, just kind of during or just before the pandemic, we were like, look, businesses can kind of benefit from the same platform, to your point. And we started, you know, selling what we call Thinkific Plus, which is more of our B2B side. But what we really did is just kind of take the power that we built for creators. And we said, look, businesses, like, this could be useful for you too. And we see that a lot in customer education type programs that our clients and customers build. And the interesting thing is that you see, like, a lot of the trends and things that are happening on the creator side, you see them, like, you see businesses trying to pick those up and trying to use this almost human type element in their marketing, whereas B2B used to be like very stiff, right? Just, and like, you would go to a B, like, the last time you went to a B2B technology company, like a SaaS company website, and you have no idea what their tech does, because like all of the words are just, you know, marketing speak, right? SaaS speak. And so with this advent, I think, of the creator economy, especially, you're seeing more companies that have to like humanize themselves and really capitalize on that unique, almost that unique genius and that unique, you know, point of view and personality. And that's the interesting thing that we're definitely seeing, especially coming from B2B marketing, that, you know, we used to have a very like, you know, stiff upper lip kind of tone of voice. It's changing. And you're seeing that across the board. You always see it in retail first. You know, I always point to like the Wendy's Twitter account from like a few years ago. That was one of the first, it went like viral because people were like, whoa, this like corporate account is allowing someone to be so sassy on Twitter to other corporate accounts. And now you see that across the board on TikTok with like, you know, all these different corporations in the comment section of like funny videos. I always see like NFL teams and things like that, you know, in there. Mm-hmm. And people are, so you're seeing that transition of that humanized element coming from, I think, you know, the creator and the creator economy, right? Of the individual tactics being picked up and companies really wanting to be seen as human.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, our company focuses almost exclusively on B2B, and mm-hmm. it's because it was such an underserved sector where, like you said, stiff upper lip, or I would say boring, right? Like boring, that's what it was. And being able to sprinkle some fun and personality goes a long way, even mm-hmm. when it comes to enterprise sales or whatnot. Like at the end of the day, people still want to do business with people. We're not just robots, as it were. So I think that's really cool. And your point about that unique genius mm-hmm. is something that I think a lot of people forget, right? With AI, I tell this to a lot of my clients, it's like hiring an intern.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And that's kind of the extent right now. And I think that's okay.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, with regards to B2B, where do you see that going? Right, you guys are growing into that space.
Yeah.
How do you see the next 12, 18 months?
So, twofold. I think for us specifically, we're really leaning into that customer education space. So, B2B wise, customer education, we really believe that, especially in, you know, the economy that we're in today, much easier to retain your existing customers than attract new ones. I think everyone on that B2B side right now is seeing, you know, average deal lengths extend. People are not making the decisions on software buying, you know, that kind of thing. And so for us, I think the biggest thing is getting companies in our space to understand that if you educate a customer, if you engage with a customer, if you have that unique point of view and unique genius with a customer, they're going to stay with you. And doing your best to do that. And then one of the best ways you can do that is through customer education programs, whether it's a lead gen program or it's a retention program or it's a secondary line of revenue. That's a really great space for companies to look at today. And again, take some cues from the creator market on how you build those programs, right? In terms of B2B marketing overall, I see this trend just continue as, you know, we see a lot of the what's happening in the creator space and what's happening in like the B2C-ish marketing space where you see this humanized element coming in. And I often call it, that B2B marketing can be really cute. And cute is, you know, we all love cute. We engage with cute. We think it's funny. We get a little smile out of it. And I think that this trend of seeing B2B marketing go along these same lines is just going to continue. And I think that it'll evolve more into seeing things like, you know, creators and they have communities and they have really strong audiences that they can monetize. And they do that because of their engagement and who they are. And I think you're going to start seeing companies really travel into that space too. You see it in some cases already. I think a really good one that I know about is Cricut. If you're a crafter, if you ever go to a Michael's, there's this thing called a Cricut machine. And it's like crafting, you're creating different outlines for things and like stencils and things like that. And so there is a very strong community of Cricuters. And they know this. They know there's other crafting devices on the market. And they really covet their Cricut community and they engage with them heavily. And they have, you know, and I think that that's a really good example of something, like someone in retail, right? Or CPG, it just really saying, look, I'm going to be human and I'm going to engage with this company. You see companies like Hootsuite, to do a local example. They just did a rebrand, I think it was last year, and they have their mascot, Owly. And when I was there, all the emails used to come from Owly. So when you started a Hootsuite account, you know, on the self-serve side, you started a free account, all the emails came from Owly. Owly welcomes you. Owly wants you to do this, right? Like, and he was this friendly mascot that came to all the events and things like that. When we started the enterprise side of Hootsuite, we said, look, the emails can't come from Owly. Like, that's not going to fly. And honestly, if like looking back, me making that decision, you know, like, you know, if I could change that decision, I would have said, yes, heck yes. The emails can come from Owly because they're cute, they're funny, they're engaging. But at the time we said, which, you know, arguably could have been the right decision, but, you know, we don't want to go to a Fortune 500 company and have an email come from an owl. But I think that that's the difference between then and what's happening now and what's going to continue happening in the next 5 years.
I think it's true. I think there's something in the zeitgeist, if you want to call it that, where, yeah, cute. I wouldn't have coined it cute, but maybe cheeky, you know, cheeky. A little bit. Like, but it's absolutely true that there is a bit more permission to that. I think it's similar to back in the 70s when, you know, you couldn't not wear a suit and, you know, you couldn't have facial hair or whatever. Like, and now it's like no one cares, right? And so I think it's a really good progression, and I think it gives us marketers a whole lot more breathing room in terms of the things that we can do. Now, I did want to, before we run out of time, ask about this Dijon mustard thing that you got going on. Because, like, is it from a course that you took that you got into Dijon mustard? Is it like you being cute or cheeky for your LinkedIn? Because that's what you got. And you told me in the pre-call that you get randos sending you fancy Dijon mustard. So what's going on?
So I would say that I've always loved Dijon mustard. I was a mustard kid, which is a weird...
Who's a mustard kid? I've never met a mustard kid. Every kid likes ketchup, and you're Canadian. You're supposed to put ketchup on everything. Where does mustard come from? And Dijon, let alone. Not yellow mustard, Dijon mustard.
Dijon mustard. So I started with regular mustard. You have to have there's an entryway to mustard, and it's always like the good French's, yellow mustard. And this is going to be, I think this is going to be really gross. Do you back in the day, school, hot lunches, there was hot dog day.
Always had hot dog day.
Yeah. Hot dog day, but it was like ketchup, mustard, plain or whatever, right?
And relish. There was relish.
I think there was relish, yeah. So I always got a mustard hot dog. And I just loved it. I don't know. My mom used to work hot dog day and she knew that I loved the mustard hot dog, so I always got one. And then it just progressed. I got into Dijon. My mom makes a really good Dijon vinaigrette. And she's actually, I'm trying to get her to do a salad dressing cookbook. She's like, her salad dressings are pretty good. And so from there, it just kind of like, I couldn't get enough. And so like, if you go into my fridge, it drives my partner nuts that I have like an entire shelf of different.
What do you put this on? Like, is just hot dogs? Clearly, it sounds like you put it on everything.
I put it on everything. I do. I eat a lot.
No, like not ice cream. You don't put it on ice cream.
I don't think I've put it on ice cream, but I put it on I think this is not unheard of, but I usually put a layer of Dijon on my toast, and then like, you know, you have like an egg, or like I have it with tofu. I have it always with tuna fish sandwiches, which also like people are going to be like,
tuna fish sandwiches.
This woman's taste is bizarre.
Wow.
You think, yeah. And so I really like a little bit of spicy one. There's one with like horseradish, you know, you love the Grey Poupons, like everything. I make them into like salad dressings, but mustard is a key element. I would say the majority of my meals.
So how many, so you said you went, so if I was to walk into Christy's fridge right now, and open the door, how many bottles or items of mustard, moutarde, as they say, would I have to see?
There's got to be 30 in there, only because there's like a shelf in the door, and then there's like a half shelf on the top shelf of all mustards, like small, big, like, you know,
that's,
all kinds.
That's a lot, man, like 30. I mean, I have a bit of a scotch collection. I don't think I have 30 bottles of scotch.
Little, and they last a really long time.
I guess so, because if you have 30, you're going to like not use the whole bottle. And what mood? So tell me, is it a mood thing? It's like, oh, today I feel like, and then I don't even know, insert X bottle of mustard versus that. Like, so
definitely it's a mood thing for sure.
So on a day like today, which is sunny on the West Coast, mood. I know we call it the wet coast in Canada, but on the West Coast. It's sunny today. It's nice. It's a little chilly. What mustard did you dabble into today?
So this morning I had, we did a really straight, like, very straight Dijon with, I would call it a dry Dijon. So it's got a little like white wine vinegar in it, which creates a very dry kind of like flavor to it. It's a very small bottle. I think I got this one. There's a store in Victoria that I found since we moved here. And it's been a real enabler for my mustard collection. and it's called, I'll give it a shout out. It's called the Market Garden. Everyone knows about it. And I just found it. But it's such a good mustard. It's like a very dry mustard, like almost like a Grey Poupon, but Grey Poupon has like a little, there's a little something like a little spice there, and this has no spice. It's just a very dry mustard.
And so do you also like, because you said horseradish, what about like wasabi? Like, do you?
Oh yeah, I love wasabi.
Okay, so you kind of like that kind of like nasally spicy thing that you got going on. All right, okay.
Yeah. It's like a thing for sure. And like this one in particular is really good in salad dressings. Like, it's the go-to salad dressing one for sure.
Do you eat like sushi and put mustard on
it? You can
put
mustard on sushi for sure.
You do? Okay. Well, because actually, you know, dim sum, being Chinese, like I put a lot of mustard on like a lot of my dumplings that I eat. I don't know why it's a thing. It's yellow mustard. It's not like a fancy mustard, you know.
It's just yellow mustard.
Yellow. But it's good. It'll do.
It's good. We had sushi last night, and I put like a Dijon, like a spicier horseradishy Dijon on my salmon sashimi, which honestly, people on this, if they listen to this podcast, they're going to think I'm just insane, but it's really good and you should try it.
I think I will. I think I'm actually going to do that. And I'm going to like, because I already have this kind of wasabi thing where it's like a little bit of soy sauce with like mostly wasabi. It just make it liquid paste so it sticks onto my sushi.
Yeah.
So, I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to try. Look, hey, creator economy. I'm going to create or part of, join your creator economy of mustard. I think that's cool. That's really cool. It makes you unique.
I should do a mustard course on Thinkific.
You should. You absolutely should.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we go, a couple of rapid fire questions just to get to know Chris. I know we've known a lot about you now with the whole Dijon thing, but like, let's ask a few more questions before we wrap it up. First thing that you ever marketed.
First thing that I ever marketed in like a professional sense would
doesn't even have to be professional.
I know. I'm just thinking, like, what did I market? As a child, I took a bunch of dog food samples that we got sent to our house and tried to sell them to our neighbors.
Oh, with a markup. So smart.
Markup. Free dog food samples. Trying to go over there and tell them how amazing.
Did it work?
No, they called my mom that this strange little child was trying to sell them free sample dog food at their house. But no, I think the first thing I really marketed was the investors at Canaccord. When we got them on social, it was wild. They had, no idea what they were doing, and they were on Twitter tweeting different things, and we had to really protect the brand. And so that was kind of one of the first things that we did was the social media management piece of Canaccord was really interesting.
Oh wow. I would have loved to have seen some of those tweets.
It was pretty funny. Yeah.
So you got young kids. What's playing right now, either music wise, YouTube wise, streaming?
Yeah. We're in a big, always love Bluey. Bluey's a big one for us. If parents are listening to this, I feel like Bluey's got a bit of a cult following right now. And it's a little blue heeler cattle dog in Australia. And it's like an amazing, they're 8-minute episodes. And I think I've cried in like 4 or 5 of them. Like they'll just heartstrings.
You've cried?
Oh, full tears in a Bluey episode. And now that I've said that, you can go look some of them up and they're really good. And then my daughter has ventured, I play select Taylor Swift for her. And so she's gotten into, and a lot of them are in their movies and stuff. She loves the movie Sing. She loves singing and getting, she pretends she's on stage all the time. And so we've got a few Taylor Swift songs on the repeat. And then my son is obsessed with Monster Mash right now.
Ooh, perfect timing. Right before Halloween. So then what about the best thing that you've, I think I already know the answer to this. What's the best thing you bought under $10?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the mustards.
It's like, so are all mustards under $10?
No.
Are there expensive mustard that's
There's
above?
Expensive mustards. Yeah. There was a whole nother world of like that store I was talking about. I was just like blown away. There's like a $25.
What did they make
mustard.
It with? $25 mustard.
It's imported.
Put gold in it? What's in it?
It's the import. Like if you're buying the import ones from like Britain, which are like, they have some good ones, right? Then you're paying the markup on the import. But I don't know if there's gold flecks or, silver string running around the side of it. But definitely under $10, you can still get a good mustard.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Before we go, how do folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can on LinkedIn. I am pretty active in my DMs. So Christy Horseman, LinkedIn, and then on Thinkific.com, you can check out Thinkific, and you can always email me. I have kind of a general email inbox at Christy@Thinkific.com that I get a lot of like and general inquiries and things like that into. But I always check it in case anyone wants to have a chat and talk about marketing.
Awesome. Or mustard.
But don't feel like anybody needs to send me any because people do send me some. That's amazing.
Yeah. I've never heard this before. This is like of all the interviews, I'm pretty sure there's not one. We've done interviews of marketers for the last 6 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you are the first person that's ever gotten mustard sent to them just on the regular random.
Yeah, I think it's in my LinkedIn profile. And so a lot of our, you know, friendly sales folks that are trying to sell us, you know, software will pick up on it. And I think I always think kudos to them for picking up and doing something different. But now it's happened a few times. So
that's great. Okay. Well, yeah. Hey, Christy, it was a pleasure to meet you today, learn a little bit more about the creator economy, and then also think about, maybe putting that mustard on my sushi.
I honestly, like, on the salmon specifically, very good. I might not tuna too, but very good.
Okay. All right, everybody. Well, thank you very much for your time listening to me and Christy here today on Marketing News Canada. We're signing off and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, Christy.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.